KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life, peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, movie theaters are banned in Saudi Arabia and women face many restrictions. Our guest today overcame the odds. Haifa Al-Mansour is the first Saudi woman to direct a feature and the first person ever to shoot a film entirely on Saudi soil. But first on the Hollywood News Banter, TV broadcasters are nervous as the fall season gets underway. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm joined in the studio by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, the fall season is getting underway for the broadcast networks. A lot of nervousness because, as you know, last year was pretty rough.
Yeah, and I think the fall season is its own kind of strange idea. We spent a lot of time talking about the summer movie season where all these movies are kind of crammed into this narrow window. And it feels like TV is going to repeat the same thing where all these shows are jammed into a very narrow window and the odds of success are very slim.
Yeah, it's an idea that the networks are moving away from, but nonetheless, they are rolling out their shows. And there's been, as I said, a lot of dread because of so much ratings erosion last year. And some of the networks really saw as much as a quarter of the audience vanish. And certainly the critics have not been feeling like, oh, so much to look forward to. However, I will say, for what it's worth, Fox did launch one of its new hour dramas, Sleepy Hollow, and it did really well, the asterisk being that a lot of the other networks have yet to bring out their new wares. You know, NBC has Blacklist with James Spader, which is a sort of a Silence of the Lambs-esque drama. And ABC has one that's going to be watched by a lot of people, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. coming out of that big Marvel universe.
Yeah, I think the question is whether or not there's a TV audience as big as the Avengers audiences in movies. And getting back to your other point about ratings, I know that Fox is now almost predicting what its ratings are going to be once DVR viewers are factored in. So not only are the ratings eroding, but the networks themselves don't even know what the ratings mean anymore.
Yeah, this has been a subject of huge complaint. Kevin Reilly, the head of programming at Fox, made a huge issue of this at the meeting of the TV critics last July. And its initiative that they've just been agitating that Nielsen is not providing the numbers that they need. Next year, Nielsen has just announced they're going to include viewing on smartphones and tablets. So that's going to be an evolving story. So Disney, of course, owns ABC. They're trying to really get bang for their buck on having bought Marvel. They also bought Pixar. Their model now is to have these big suppliers that they have acquired, such as Marvel and Pixar. But next year, no Pixar on the Disney release schedule for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, since 2005. This is, I think, kind of an amazing story. Pixar is trying to step up its film production. They want to have two movies a year. And the movie that was scheduled to come out next year, The Good Dinosaur, is not going to come out in 2014. It's been pushed to 2015. And the reason being that the director, Bob Peterson, was fired off the film. And this is, it doesn't happen that frequently in live action. Happens a lot at Pixar. This is the fourth time in eight movies that a director has been replaced on a Pixar film. And it's a slightly different model. Directors at Pixar are employees. They don't come in with agents and managers and publicists. They're just, you know, as, even though they're more important, they're just as equal as somebody flipping burgers in the cafeteria. But it does show that Good Dinosaur is a troubled film. They're not going to be able to fix it in time. And so no Pixar movies next year. And in 2015, there will be two Pixar movies, Good Dinosaur and Pete Docter. Probably their best director, who did Up, has a new film called Inside Out.
Of course, the competition, as we saw this past summer, absolutely brutal in animation. And there's been some complaining. You know, these movies still make a lot of money, but there's been complaining the last few. Cars 2, it's for my money, Brave, not quite up to that Pixar magical standard.
And I'd put Monsters University from this past summer in that group as well. It was not nearly as successful commercially or critically as Universal's Despicable Me 2. And Pixar used to have a very original movie every year, and now it's a lot of sequels. Monsters University is a spinoff. Cars 2, obviously a sequel. The original stories seem to be fewer and further between.
Elsewhere in the movie business, the Motion Picture Association of America, the group that represents the big studios, surprisingly came out with another report saying that Google search engines help piracy by leading people who are searching for films and TV shows to illegal sites. And perhaps unsurprisingly, Google basically issued another report saying, we did not.
Yeah, Google says basically search is not a major driver of traffic to pirate sites. The MPAA says exactly the opposite, that not only is it searches that lead to pirated sites, it searches on Google that 82% of searches that led to pirated material were done on Google. I think the more important and interesting statistic is that 58% of queries that led consumers to infringing sites were kind of general, not specific pirate questions. It was like, can I find this TV show? Can I find this movie? I want to get information about this song. And it inadvertently led those searches to pirated sites. Now, Google says that it has changed its algorithm, so it factors in a little bit more what kind of copyright protection the material on these sites gets. The MPA says that even before and after the algorithm was implemented, it makes no difference. Google is pointing a huge number of people to pirated material.
Yes, and we saw last year that the studios thought they were going to work their will in Congress and get an Online Piracy Act law passed. That went down in flames. Google really managed to emerge triumphant in that particular fight. There was a big grassroots movement and backlash against the studios. I don't think the studios saw it coming at all. And so far, they just don't seem to really have their arms around what they can do. There seems to me that we need the need for some kind of a summit in Washington with some leadership about what's going to happen here. But Washington has so many problems right now that I would think this is pretty low on the list.
I think it's very low on the list. And I think a solution is going to be very hard to get to, because once you start limiting searches, you're dealing with First Amendment issues. And then I don't know where that goes from there. So this looks like this is going to get probably nastier and more complicated before it gets easier.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. The special TV roundtable edition of The Business is now available. You can find it on kcrw.com or wherever you download podcasts. Hear Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine kick around the fall TV season, the impact of changing viewer habits, and the meaning of the Emmys, with Joe Adalian of New York Magazine's Vulture.com and AJ Marischal of Variety. Up next, Haifa Al-Mansour, the first Saudi woman ever to direct a feature film. The new film Wajda is, in some ways, a simple story of a young girl who longs for a bicycle. She has to figure out how to get the money, but she has a much bigger obstacle to overcome. Wajda lives in Saudi Arabia, a culture in which girls are expected to be pious and quiet and definitely are not encouraged to ride bikes.
بس يا بنات ايش هالضحك والصوت العالي سلامتكم ما تدرون ان صوت البنات ما المفروض يطلع برا ويسمعون الرجال.
Set in Riyadh, Wajda provides a rare glimpse into the cloistered world of women in Saudi Arabia. It's a world in which women may wear Western clothes in private, but must cover themselves from head to toe when they go out in public. 10-year-old Wajda rebels in small ways, like wearing high-top sneakers under her dress. In making Wajda, filmmaker Haifa Al-Mansour had to work around the many constraints imposed on women in her native country. At times, she had to direct from inside a van, using walkie-talkies to communicate with her cast and crew. Her film is now playing in the U.S. and abroad, but not in Saudi Arabia, where movie theaters are banned. Still, Saudi Arabia just submitted Wajda as its first ever contender for the Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. Ironically, to see the movie, a Saudi nominating committee had to fly to Dubai. At the same time, to qualify for the Oscar, the film had to be shown in its country of origin. To meet that requirement, special screenings were set up at embassies and cultural centers in Saudi Arabia. When we recently spoke with Al-Mansour, she explained why movie theaters are forbidden in her home country.
Public exhibition of art is not accepted. And people want to keep the society as pure, and they feel art is kind of a corruption to this purity. And it has been even with the music, like we didn't have a lot of festivals, and it's changing now because we have a lot of male singers and they're very powerful and very popular. You can see concerts every now and then. But film falls in this category of like a public showing. But people can watch films a lot on their at home and through paid TV and on DVD online. I grew up watching a lot of films that way, not online.
Were there any particular films that were inspirational to you as when you were a kid?
I got all my inspiration as a kid is from mainstream cinema. I watch a lot of Bruce Lee, a lot of Jackie Chan, and a lot of, like, I don't know, Disney movies. And it was amazing to see Snow White, for example. It was a great day for me as a kid. And I grew up in a small town where nothing happens in a small town. So it was a great day just to see the birds around Snow White and the singing and all that.
I mean, is it considered a sort of a subversive thing to watch Snow White? She's out in the world. She's interacting with men. She's not wearing. I mean, in Saudi Arabia, that wouldn't be an acceptable behavior. It's obviously a fairy tale. But is it considered that's okay to watch that?
Well, my family is a little bit open. They never told us that. But in the mainstream, like in the main... Like the dominant thought in Saudi, yes, you cannot watch films because they are corrupt and all that. It's a work of evil and stuff like that. So a lot of my classmates never watched films, and they feel even music corrupts their soul because they have a very strict interpretation of Islam. But it wasn't like forbidden. It was allowed, and by law you can rent movies and you can watch them at home. And it is left for you how conservative you are.
Now, I don't know what the thought was about a career for you as a kid. In your film, a lot of very young girls are being married off, and it's almost like a threat. If you don't behave yourself, I'll marry you off.
That's true. Well, no, my family never threatened that they will marry us off. But I come from a very middle-class family that appreciates work and education and all that. So my mother wants to have us all to be doctors or engineers or a teacher. That is the most desired profession in Saudi, to be a teacher, because schools are segregated. You will deal only with females. You don't have to interact with men. And that is the best thing ever to happen to a job for a woman in Saudi who is very traditional, and they need, and she wants to keep on within the cultural frame. But I go back to my hometown now to visit my mother, and I see how things have changed. I studied in Cairo. Like, I left high school. I went to the American University in Cairo to do my bachelor degree. And all my colleagues, like my friends, wanted me to come back because it's almost a social suicide, you know? I'll never get married. I'll never have a family and all that. And now a lot of girls are just all over the world going outside there. And here in New York, I see a lot of Saudi students, just female Saudi students, and changed a lot.
I would think that maybe they have dual identity. You know, if they're in New York, they walk around like a Western person and come back to Saudi Arabia and they're back in the old garb. Is that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Not a dual identity, but I think there is a clash, big clash between modernity and tradition in Saudi Arabia, because people are rich and they have access to things. Like, they have internet, they have cars, they can travel every day, every summer to Europe and all that. And then they go back home and they have to abide by very traditional social conducts and all that. And I think it creates somehow tension in what they want and what the rest of the society wants them to be.
Now, this little girl in the film, she wants a bicycle. That's her objective in life, is to get this bicycle. And how common would it be now for a woman to be riding around on a bicycle?
Oh, no, it's not common at all. No, women, outdoors activities are not allowed for women. But now in April, a law has been passed and it changed. And women can buy bicycle in Saudi Arabia. But again, and only in recreation areas and with the male supervision. And yeah, but I think it is a small change, but it changes the mindset and how people perceive women and what people think of women. And that is nice.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking with Haifa Al-Mansour, whose film Wajda tells the story of a little girl growing up in Saudi Arabia. The movie follows her quest to buy a bike, an idea that's frowned upon in a society that imposes many, many restrictions on women. The movie was financed in part by a German company, but perhaps surprisingly, it was also funded in part by a billionaire Saudi prince, Al-Waleed bin Talal.
He's a very progressive prince, and he pushes for women and all that. And that is one of the reasons that his company came on board on this film. And Saudi Arabia is very much divided. Like, people are very conservative, but there are so many intellectuals and so many people who are who wants to push for women's rights and who wants to make more room for women. But the society itself, as being tribal and conservative and all that, and it's hard for them to accept change. They're very reluctant and they feel threatened sometimes.
Well, so you are obviously, your ambition to shoot in Saudi Arabia, that was a a big hurdle to overcome, right? It's not like you just stroll in and do anything. You can't necessarily walk into a shop without on your own. Can you in Saudi Arabia? Or can you now?
No, there is a lot of restaurants that is only for men. So be careful if you go to Saudi. Some restaurants, if you don't see the word family, it is for singles. You cannot get in as a woman. I was really reluctant to go because I didn't know what to do. And it is a segregated country. I don't know how to shoot the scenes outside. But there is TV. And thanks to TV, we hired a TV line of producer. And he got us the permission and he got us everything. And yeah, and I tried also to write a story that respects the culture, let alone I'm making film about empowering women and all that. So I didn't want to have to be too radical. There was no nudity or love scenes or kissing. And I felt like I can tell a story like Iranians do with a lot of that projects my society and still maintain my voice, what I want to say, and but work within this that limited space.
When you were seeking permits to shoot outside and so forth, did you say that this is your project and that this is a woman director making a film, or did you kind of create a different identity for the film?
No. It was we gave them all the information, and but when we shot outside, since the country is segregated, I was in a van and I wasn't able to go outside and work with men. And it wasn't only I wasn't able to, I wasn't trying to clash with the culture. I wasn't trying to create a scene by going outside in the middle of the street and just people see me like working with men and then they get angry. That it wasn't my aim in making a film. I wanted to engage with my art and make the scenes work. And that was my primary concern. And it was really frustrating to be in a confined place and like not to be able to be with the cast and the crew. And always I have to talk to them on a walkie-talkie, but I screamed at everybody. I have to tell you, my voice was heard.
So I guess it would be frustrating and hampering. I mean, did you have to sort of say, don't stand over there or do stand over there? I mean, you're telling them this from a remote.
Yes, I was like, make the frame wider. But I felt it is very important not to stop at things like this. Because in the Middle East, things are very difficult. And to achieve things, you have to find a way to do them and not say, I cannot do them.
Why not choose a different location, though?
Because I wanted to make an authentic film. Like, nobody sees Saudi. Nobody knows how Saudi looks like. And it is, for me, I wanted to tell a story about where I come from. And this is the first film, like, I felt coming from Saudi and about, I wanted to tell the voice also with local voices, with Saudi voices and all that, to maintain its authenticity.
Did you have difficulty casting the film?
Yes, of course. We have some actresses. It's a small pool, but all the adult actresses, they chose to be in the entertainment business. It's a smaller pool to choose from, of course, but at least there are some. And Reem Abdullah is a very famous TV star. The Reem Abdullah is the mother who played the mother.
Right.
Yeah, but finding the little girl was difficult because you need to start all over and convince people to become in a film, and they have to make that decision that they will want to allow their daughter, and that is difficult. But she came in and she was like, I saw the character in her.
And what was, I mean, is there a risk to her in doing it in terms of being perceived in a certain way?
No. She's a star now, and when she goes to the mall, the film hasn't been shown in Saudi like on a wide scale. We showed only in like cultural screenings and all that. But the film's covered a lot in the press, and her picture is always out there, and a lot of people recognize her when she goes to the mall. And I honestly, I didn't want to make a film that jeopardizes anybody's safety.
Did you have Saudi men on your crew, or was that like not going to work out?
No, we had some Saudi men, but it was difficult to take orders from a woman. You know how Arab men are, but I tried to be friendly, to engage them, to give them a sense of ownership to the project.
After a short break, Haifa Al-Mansour has gotten death threats, but says she considers that a rite of passage for an artist in her home country. To make a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness.
Hi, this is Fred Savage. And if you're like me, you turn to The Business every week to catch up on what's going on in show business. It's informative. If you're also like me, you are benefiting from a free service provided to you from KCRW. And the way you can say thank you and keep this and other great programming on the air is by visiting kcrw.com/join and become a member of this station.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Haifa Al-Mansour is the first Saudi woman to direct a feature film, and her movie Wajda is the first feature film shot entirely on Saudi soil. Wajda tells the story of a 10-year-old girl who longs for a bicycle, something that's frowned upon in the very conservative Saudi culture. Though movie theaters don't exist in Saudi Arabia, it's common for men and women to watch films in the privacy of their homes. Al-Mansour, who grew up as one of 12 children in a relatively liberal family, watched Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan movies throughout her childhood. But she still didn't imagine that someday she'd become a filmmaker. Instead, she went to work at an oil company, where she found it hard, as a woman, to make her voice heard.
I felt like it's hard for me, and it was a low point, and I wanted to just take a hobby and make something that makes me happy. And I loved films, so I made the film with my brother holding the camera. And so it was like really not even low budget, no budget. And I sent it to a small competition, and it was accepted. And from then, things I felt that it gave me a voice, and I really enjoyed making that film, so I started like reading and watching high cinema, and no more Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee.
Right. So your taste changed, and then did you make a documentary?
Yeah, I made a documentary, and I traced some women in my hometown, and just to see from different generations, and it was amazing. Like people, women my mother's age, they are maybe not educated, but they are very mature and they are very self-assured and their ideas about life is very mature. And when I go to girls like my age, I felt they are where we grew up with urbanization, with the oil boom, with a lot of money and with a lot of literature on women, a lot of strict interpretation of religion on women. I felt we're very, and with a lot of segregation, women are very naive and afraid of the world, and they don't understand who they are and what they want. It's amazing, and it's very sad. And then I interviewed the girls who, younger, who grew up with internet, and they're feisty. They're like Wajda. They have a great sense of humor. They don't want to take no for an answer. And those girls gave me a lot of hope, and it is amazing to see them wanting just to be heard and to be seen and never want to give up. And that was amazing.
So when you were making this documentary, what were you thinking you would do with it? And what could you do with it?
For me, when I make a film, is also because there is no industry, is it's art. I just want to say something. I want to be heard. I want to put my ideas in a place and just so I wasn't really thinking of what to do with that film later on and distribution-wise. Mm-hmm. I was more of I want to make something and about myself, about the world, and, this having this voice and opinion. And I submitted it to film festivals, and it won the first gold in the history of Saudi cinemas. It was the first ever gold prize for Saudi.
That must have been interesting. I don't know how the culture within the country would respond to that. Yay or not so much yay?
No, not so much. They were very, only conservative people. It was a very controversial film, because I also interviewed a sheikh, a very prominent sheikh, who said women don't have to cover their faces because it's more of tradition, not religion. And he was one of the most important sheikhs in Saudi. And that created a lot of debate in how would he say something like that. And so a delegation from some other sheikhs from the court went to him and asked him to change his opinion. And he did. And he sent it in a press release to all the news agencies and stuff in Saudi that he doesn't stand up by what he said. And then the debate became in the news is that sometimes religious scholars cannot revisit their literature. There's peer pressure. And I felt so good because the film opened all that kind of debate back home.
I've read that you had received some death threats. I don't know. Is that something to do more with the documentary or to do also with this film?
It was more with the documentary, because the documentary was in 2006 when I did that. And people there were more conservative. Now Saudis are more relaxed and also, they didn't know me that much before. They felt there is this woman who's doing this. And, a documentary is very political and controversial in nature. And then I discussed it with a lot of intellectuals in Saudi. And I discovered every writer and every actor and every performer received one of these. So, yeah, this is not very serious.
So you have to get one or you're not really succeeding.
We're
in
not
your
very
field.
Effective.
Right.
I don't know.
So is there a sort of an underground world of people in sort of Saudi cinema, but it's not official or public?
I don't think it's underground. I think a lot of young people trying to make films, short films, and they try to go to competitions around the region. And there are film festivals now, like in Dubai and Doha and Abu Dhabi. And it is like a hop for them to go and to get together and debate and bring their ideas. And in Saudi, there is no public funding for film or like backing for film. But Saudi short films from a lot of young filmmakers stand out because the quality of work is very rich. I think Saudi Arabia has so much to offer in terms of storytelling. There's a lot of layers and lots of complexity. And a culture like that breeds in a lot of good stories. And that is why a lot of young filmmakers who make shorts have so much to bring and so much. That is why they keep winning awards in all those film festivals. And yeah, everybody's upset because we don't have any real like system for cinema. But when we bring films, they are always like people are interested to know about them.
You know, I was wondering about one of the other things that was striking to me about the film, you know, this glimpse into this world is the degree of superstition in this little girl's world. There's constant talk about the devil. is that an old-fashioned thing or is that still a current feeling in their worlds of these girls' schools and, you know, these homes don't leave the book open or the devil might spit on it or something like that.
Well, yeah. No, I tried as much as possible to bring, it's almost like a documentary. Whatever is there is like, I take scenes from life and just bring them in cinema. And I tried not to be judgmental in a lot of things. Like I try to detach myself. And I sometimes if I find that thing happen and I witnessed it and I felt it is kind of interesting for me, I wanted to put it in the movie and maybe people will see the same way, the things in the same way I do. So it's very accurate.
As you grew up, you said your parents were comparatively liberal people.
Uh-huh.
Does that apply in this world, that in the movie, you can kind of be yourself, relax in closed doors, you know, in your home maybe. Everywhere else it seems you're covered up, your behavior is supposed to be a certain way. Is that town in your film like the town you grew up in?
Oh, yeah, very similar. I tried to reconstruct the world I inhabited in Saudi and just open it up. And in Saudi, as you described it very accurately, Saudi, there is a clear distinction between what is private and what is public. People in their private homes, they can watch films and they can listen to music and they enjoy food and dance and all that. But once they step outside, they have to conduct themselves in a certain way because of a lot of social pressure. And Saudi is tribal and collective. People want always to conform. But those ideas are like not as solid as before. Things are cracking a little and people want to be happy. And especially younger kids now, they're very modern. They have access to the internet, to pop culture. And it is moving away from that.
At this point, if somebody were to say they wanted to build a theater, would it be okay to say we're going to build a theater and only men can go? Or is it, you think it's a matter of time or it's just not in the cards for the future in Saudi Arabia?
I think it's a matter of time, but I think it is like, it's one of those debates. Like people are very passionate about it and people very either for it or against it because it is like one of those topics, like women's driving, opening cinemas. And there are so many that became like more of a hot subject that is polarizing subject in Saudi. So a lot of people are for it and against it. And sometimes that makes things harder to resolve. But I think Saudi is a very young country. 65% of the population is below the age of 25. And those kids are different. Their world is different. And what they see and what they get exposed to and their education is totally different. And that will ultimately will change a lot of things in Saudi.
Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
That was Haifa Al-Mansour. Her film Wajda is out in limited release now. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps. And you can hear the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.